So Prahlad spoke three verses in reply to Hiranyakashipu, explaining where he had learned this from. And his answer was clear. Would you say is a summary of the message of his first verse, Matirna Krishna Paritak Svatova, text 30. One sentence, but one short sentence, as opposed to one long run-on sentence. And what's the, you have some comments on that verse, commentaries to read on that verse? On that one?
The first one.
On Matirna Krishna Paritak Svatova. You can't understand. The inclination to Krishna will never come to you, my dear father, because you are griha vrata. You've taken the vow of materialistic enjoyment.
Chipurita Thakur says, Parata, by instructions of others, says from gurus like these two.
Let me repeat it just so I could quote it. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, Parata, instructions from others, means from gurus like these two. Sandamarka.
And he says, they go to hell.
They go to hell.
Someone may say, but don't grihastas ever go to swarga.
But don't, in other words, grihavrata, just household life. Here's some water. Don't householders, why do they go to hell? Don't householders, can't they go to swarga if they're just, grihavrata just means householder, one who's taken his vows in household life.
So the answer is that
Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur answers.
Their heaven or svarga is like chewing something chewed by others. Their heaven is like a brother.
Yeah. So what they consider heaven is like hell. What their heaven is, charvita charvananam, is that which has been chewed by others. It is like a brothel. And okay, the next verse is Nate Vidu Svatagatim Hi Vishnu Nirasa Ye Bahri Atamanina Andarya Tandar Paniamanas Te Pisha Tantram Urudam Nibada. So who can, in one sentence, this one's hard in one sentence, but see if you can do it, because there's more than one part. Who can say it in one sentence? Yes.
Goes to his service.
Oh, okay, that's your sentence. And then part two? Anyone else like to say part two? So one who's in that mood, materialistic life, he doesn't know that the goal of life is Vishnu, param gatim, is the service of the Lord. And the second part, comparing what they're like?
Continues to suffer.
Yeah, they're accepting the guidance of someone who's blind in continuing this materialistic path. And the result is basically death. That's 31. This is Vishwanath again?
Yes.
Hey, you fool. You are saying crooked words to me, offending my sacred feet, worshipped even by Indra, because in fact all the demigods, even great devotees like Narada Muni were offering obeisances and worshipping the Lord, all but Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva were paying their obeisances to Hiranyakashipu, who had so much power. So he replies to Prahlad saying, you're saying crooked words to me, the Matirna Krishna, you're offending my sacred feet, worshipped even by Indra, even though I'm your father. Listen, you of wicked intelligence, listen. Are you saying that disciples of greatly knowledgeable Sukhacharya, your gurus, don't know the import of all scriptures so much so that you don't think their teaching is good? And Prahlad's reply, they don't know their own good, which is embodied as Vishnu. But they know the unwanted goal of heaven, etc. They know all unwanted goals. And because their hopes are wicked, their polluted minds are accustomed to strive only for external objects of happiness, which are just unwanted. Therefore, if they don't know Vishnu, how will their disciples know him? To demonstrate it, Prahlad gives an analogy. Like the blind leading the blind, they fall into a ditch. So these speakers bind with strong cords of karma to the long rope of Vedic speech. They bind one with karma to the long rope of Vedic speech. And Srila Sridhar Swami says, aren't they fixed in Sri Krishna's nature of highest bliss? If asked this ignorant question, Prahlad says, no. Those who have bad hopes, minds filled with material desires, don't know Vishnu. And according to the Monier Williams Dictionary, the tantri, which is in there, the tantri is as a rope. Yes, Pisha tantriam. They're a long line to which a series of calves are fastened by smaller cords. Okay, so some wonderful comments by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur and by Srila Swami. And then the third of the verses in his reply is what the cure is. Naisham matis tavadarukramangrim sprishad yanarta pagamo yarta mahidisham parajo bisekam niskin chananam navaniti yavad. Unless they smear their bodies upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava completely free from material contamination, persons very much inclined towards materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord in this way can one be freed from material contamination. And it's the 32nd verse. And Srila Srila Swami. How don't they know Vishnu? Of course they do. He is declared in scripture as one Lord present in the hearts of all beings, all pervading the soul of all, and so on. Why would they go to hell? And Prahlad's answer is no. As long as they don't smear their bodies with the dust of great souls who have no material desires, they don't attain dedication of consciousness to the feet of a Rukram from the hearing of Shastra. It is withheld because of impossibility. What is the sense of that impossibility? It's not possible to attain that.
Even though they hear the Shastra, they still don't understand really.
Yes. Even though they hear Shastra, they don't actually understand. The goal of touching the feet of the Lord by consciousness is to remove the unwanted samsara, material existence. The meaning is that without the mercy of great souls, there is no ascertaining the truth and no liberation. Oh, this was Srila Srila Swami. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has a simple, shorter comment. If Shastra said that Vishnu is the goal, your gurus, knowing all the Shastra, would fix their mind on Vishnu. And since they are not in Vishnu consciousness, it proves that Vishnu bhakti is not scriptural. Prahlad answers, not until they smear the upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Niskinchana or Vaishnava will they actually get the proper conclusion from their study of Shastra. It is so definite. Now let us continue. 33 till the end of the chapter. If Krishna allows, we shall finish that now. So after Prahlad had spoken in this way and then he became silent, Aranyakashipu, blinded by anger, threw him off his lap onto the ground. Gone are the thoughts, you are my son, I am your father. Now you are my enemy, because you have spoken on behalf of Vishnu, my enemy. So the friend of my enemy is my enemy. Indignant. What does indignant mean?
It's
how dare you? You know, that someone has stepped out of line, yes? How dare you? Indignant and angry. You have spoken like this about the one who has killed my brother, Aranyaksha? Indignant and angry, His reddish eyes like molten copper, red. Hiranyakasipu said to his servants, "O demons, take this boy away from me. He deserves to be killed. Kill him as soon as possible." He was so angry. "Kill him immediately. This boy, Prahlad, is the killer of my brother, for he has given up his family to engage in the devotional service of the enemy, Lord Vishnu, like a menial servant." He was furious. And when one is angry, one is capable of doing anything, committing any kind of violence. Practically speaking, intense anger is like insanity. Although Prahlad is only 5 years old, even at this young age, he has given up his affectionate relationship with his father and mother. Therefore, he is certainly untrustworthy. Indeed, it is not at all believable that he will be well behaved towards Vishnu. Because the one who's supporting you, your parents, if you change your mind and give up your affectionate relationship with them, there is something wrong with your character, he's saying. So therefore, right now, he is professing devotion to Vishnu. But a person like this, who has the kind of character that this Prahlad has, who has given up his natural and affectionate relationship with his parents, he's so untrustworthy. For sure, later on, his mind will flip. And he will also give up this devotional service to Vishnu. And an example. Although a medicinal herb, this is Hiranyakasipu speaking, being born in the forest does not belong to the same category as a man. If beneficial, it is kept very carefully. An herb different from a man, if it's good for the man, if it's healing, if it has good medicinal properties, it's kept very carefully. Similarly, in the same mood, if someone outside one's family is favorable, he should be given protection like a son. If he's acting like a son and carefully and favorably towards you, then you take care of him like a son. On the other hand, if a limb of one's body is poisoned by disease, it must be amputated so that the rest of the body may live happily. Similarly, even one's own son, if unfavorable, must be rejected, although he is born of one's own body. So he's giving his logic for why Prahlad must be amputated from the family, killed. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed all devotees of the Lord to be humbler than the grass and more tolerant than trees. Otherwise, there will always be disturbance in their execution of devotional service. Why? Why is humility and tolerance required to remain undisturbed in one's devotional service? Why is this recommendation given? Okay. Anywhere and everywhere in this world, there must be a disturbance. But the disturbances of this world, by definition, are external to us. So when there's an external disturbance, what is the natural internal reaction to the external disturbance, if you have a connection with it?
Takes our consciousness.
Okay, and then what happens to the consciousness when it steals away the consciousness? The consciousness becomes observed. There's an external disturbance, and then the mind becomes disturbed.
That means that you're not Krishna conscious anymore.
But just wait a second, Prabhu. And what happens when the mind becomes disturbed? We all have this experience when we're trying to chant our rounds or something, and our mind is real, where someone has just said something really nasty to us. Or maybe we all don't have that experience, but or we're upset by something that's happened, just the opposite of what we want happens, and our mind is disturbed, and we try to chant Hare Krishna attentively, Practically speaking, it's impossible with a disturbed mind. So therefore, the recommendation is tolerance. In other words, here is the external event that is disturbing, but don't become disturbed by it. And how is the way that we become disturbed by it? The way we become disturbed is by thinking, this should not be happening to me, usually. Or, this should not be happening. And if we think this should not be happening to me, we become intolerant. That means our false ego has become expanded and we become intolerant. This shouldn't be happening to me. And Mahaprabhu's recommendation is Amani na manadena kirtaniya sadahari trinadapi sinichena tarodapi sisnuna. And this is to make a distance between an external event and an internal mental disturbance, that we shouldn't think that this shouldn't be happening to me. We should be thinking contrarily. Tateyunu kampam susamikshamano bunjane vabma kripava patkam vidbhagva puram vidanam namaste jivitiyo mukti tatpade sadayavak. We should be thinking that this, the reactions to things I've done to others previously is now coming to me. It is my turn to get the reactions for what I've done. I deserve it. And I don't have the right to complain because I deserve it. If you slap someone out of nowhere and then he slaps you back, how can you complain? You slapped me. I slapped you, but you just slapped me. You can't complain. Well, you can complain, but it doesn't make any sense. When you just go into a store and steal everything, and then the police come, you can't complain. Why are you putting me in jail? Because, well, there's a reason. We're putting you in jail is because you just stole. And then everyone starts internally crying, well, it's not my fault, and he did this to me first, and this one happened, and this happened, and it's this one's fault. The mind starts protecting the whole circumstance. But no, Mahaprabhu's recommendation, because when the mind is in protecting mode, you also can't chant because it's agitated. It has to work so hard to protect the false ego. So therefore, Mahaprabhu's recommendation is Trinadapi Sinechera. And Lord Brahma's recommendation is Tateyano Kampam Susamikshamano. Same. So Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has instructed all devotees of the Lord to be humbler than the grass and more tolerant than a tree. Otherwise, there will always be disturbances to their execution of devotional service. And that's one of the first things you have to learn when you move to India, if you're not born here, is that you have to learn that the world will not work according to your plan. It works in its own way, it has its own system, and you have to be tolerant. Otherwise you're angry at everyone all the time. Here is a vivid example of how a devotee is disturbed by a non-devotee, even though the non-devotee is an affectionate father. The material world is such that a non-devotee father becomes an enemy of a devotee son. Having determined to kill even his son, Hiranyakashipu gave the example of amputating a part of one's body that has become septic, poisonous, and therefore injurious to the rest of the body. The same example, of course, may be also applied to non-devotees. Chanakya Pandit advises, Tyaja Durjana Samsargam Bhaja Saru Samagamam. Devotees actually serious about advancing in spiritual life should give up the company of non-devotees and always keep the company of devotees, with devotees. To be too attached to material existence is ignorance, because material existence is temporary and miserable. And to be attached to something that is temporary and miserable is foolish, obviously. So to be attached to it without knowledge is foolish. To be attached to it with knowledge is, you have to add ignorance upon that. We're acting foolishly due to ignorance. Therefore, so that's what Prahlad was saying before. Therefore, devotees who are determined to perform tapasya, penances and austerities, to realize the self, and who are determined to become advanced in spiritual consciousness, must give up the company of atheistic non-devotees. Prahlad Maharaj maintained an attitude of non-cooperation with the philosophy of his father, Hiranyakashipu. Yet, he was tolerant and humble. Hiranyakashipu, however, being a non-devotee, was so polluted that he was even prepared to kill his own son. He justified this by putting forward the logic of amputation. Another example of this logic was what Mother Devaki was and Vasudeva was subjected to when Kamsa heard the voice from the sky. Immediately, he wanted to kill Devaki, and Vasudeva spoke to him in a very gentle way, but he was prepared to kill Devaki, his own sister, just to protect his own life of something that may happen in the future, may happen, it may not happen. 9 children later, 10 children, whatever it is, the 8th child will kill you. He was ready to immediately kill Devaki to protect himself. Never mind. It may cause you're taking another person's life, but to save your own life, kill even your sister, even on the day of a marriage, in front of everyone. Same logic. So this defenseless boy was threatened in this way. So Hiranyakashipu continued with his logic. Just as uncontrolled senses are the enemies of all yogis engaged in advancing in spiritual life, this Prahlad, who appears to be a friend, is an enemy. Why? Because I cannot control him. Therefore, this enemy, whether eating, sitting, or sleeping, must be killed by all means, like the uncontrolled senses of a yogi. They will destroy his yogic practice, his life, pretty more or less. So therefore, this boy, because he is not under my control and he is doing what he wants, taking shelter of my brother's killer, who is my enemy, he must be killed or he will kill me. The demons, Rakshasas, the servants of Hiranyakashipu, thus began striking the tender parts of Prahlad Maharaj's body with their tridents. The demons all had fearful faces, sharp teeth, and reddish coppery beards and hair, and they appeared extremely threatening, making a tumultuous sound, shouting, "Chop him up, pierce him." They began striking Prahlad Maharaj, who sat silently meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very heavy to keep your consciousness focused on Krishna and peaceful in the midst of such disturbing, life-threatening circumstances. He's the opposite of Hiranyakashipu. And very difficult to do. One cannot be superficial in one's devotion to do this. And when disturbing circumstances happen to us, as they must happen to us, because we're living in the material world, we should watch ourself, our mind, and see if we react like Prahlad or we act like Hiranyakashipu. Do we get anxious immediately and want to kill anyone who opposes us, who opposed us? Or, of course, no one knows what's going on inside, only we do. And we also don't want to know what's going on inside. But if we actually watch, introspective, to look inward and see which path, who our guru is, whose path we're following, Prahlad, then we'll be able to assess how much work we need to have done. And then immediately the assessment comes to how much mercy we need, or there's a step in between. First, we assess how much work has to be done. And then when we see how huge the task is and how difficult it is, then we become a little more humble. And then we can look for mercy. So, They tried to kill Prahlad, and Prahlad remained peaceful, focused on the Lord. And the narrator continues here, Narada Muni. Even though a person who has no assets in pious activities performs some good deed, it will have no result. Thus the weapons of the demons had no tangible effect on Prahlad Maharaj because he was a devotee, undisturbed by material conditions and fully engaged in meditating upon and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unchangeable, who cannot be realized by the material senses, and who is the soul of the entire universe. So Prahlad, he was a devotee who was undisturbed by material conditions and fully engaged in meditating upon and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was undeviatedly in that condition. So then one can ask the question, well, does that mean that nothing, if someone tries to harm me, that when they pierce me with their swords and knives and tridents, that their weapons will prove fruitless in hurting me? And the primary answer is, well, are you like Prahlad? Are you actually undisturbed by material conditions because you are fully meditating upon Krishna? So first become like Prahlad, that fix, that type of nishtha. And then you can ask the question. And then the next question is, okay, say if someone is like that, perhaps it's not me, but someone is like that, will Krishna protect his body even, like he protected Prahlad's body, if he's so fixed in merciful and in his worship? And the answer to that is, the devotee who is fixed like Prahlad is fixed, he's not praying for Krishna to protect his body. He's just taking shelter of Krishna. He's Saranagata, he's surrendered fully, and he allows Krishna to deal with his body as he wants. And he knows that he is safe. Otherwise, if he didn't know he is safe, thinking about Krishna, taking shelter of Krishna, how could his mind be peaceful? But he's not identifying with his body. He's identifying with himself as Krishna's servant, and he's placed entirely under Krishna's shelter. He places himself entirely under Krishna's shelter. And however Krishna wants to deal with him, like Parikshit Maharaj was also not in anxiety. Cursed to die, he didn't retaliate, he didn't count the curse, but instead he wanted to. He saw that Krishna's hand is in this somehow or another. We don't know how, maybe, I don't know how, but so he asked the sages what to do. Sukadeva Goswami came, he heard the Bhagavatam. Another example, of course, is who became the Tidhira? Yeah, Chittaketu. Chittaketu Maharaj was cursed by Parvati to become a demon. This great devotee was cursed to be a demon, and his answer was, okay, I haven't done anything wrong, but if this is what you want, Mother, okay, I accept your curse. Parvati was shocked by this attitude. She had never experienced it before. And Lord Shiva said, see who you've cursed? Narayana Paraksave Nakutaskina Vibhuti. No fear from any circumstance. Swaga, Apavarga, liberation, Narakeshu, Apitulya, Tadarshana. It's all equal to him. So this is deep consciousness. This is fixed consciousness. This is truly devotional service. This is devotee. That kind of fixedness. And for that devotee, this is Brahma Bhuta Pasanatma, Nasochati, Nikanchati, Sarva Sameshu Bhuteshu, Madhaktim. So on that platform,
Labhate Param. He can attain the highest position. He's fixed in devotion. This is wonderful. Yes, this is how to be in the material world, but not in the material world. To be in the material world on level, on one level, but not in the material world on the actual level of one's consciousness. So one, just hold the questions, because it's, well, Krishna willing, it won't be long before we have time to ask them. But don't forget them, please. So, Prahlad Maharaj was constantly and fully engaged in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're reading from Prabhupada's purport. As it is said, Govinda Parirambitaha, Prahlad Maharaj engaged himself always in meditation, and thus he was protected by Govinda. Just as a small child on the lap of his father or mother is fully protected, and he knows it, a devotee in all conditions is protected by the Supreme Lord. Does that mean that when Prahlad Maharaj was attacked by the demons, the Rakshasas, Govinda was also attacked by the demons because he was in Prahlad's heart? So were they attacking Govinda also? And Prabhupada's answer here is, this is not possible. They cannot hurt the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not possible. So he explains that in the rest of the purport. And we'll continue with the 42nd verse. My dear King Yudhisthira, when all the attempts of the demons to kill Prahlad Maharaj were futile, they proved useless. The king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, being most fearful, began contriving other means to kill him. He who was fearful, this is so amazing, who was actually fearful? Big Hiranyakashipu, little Prahlad. Prahlad was in no anxiety. Hiranyakashipu, who had conquered the universe, was fearing Prahlad. Because Prahlad was heavy. Because his shelter was full and complete. But Hiranyakashipu, being a very determined individual, did not give up. Hiranyakashipu could not kill his son by throwing him beneath the feet of big elephants, throwing him among huge, fearful snakes, employing destructive spells, mayabi, hurling him from the top of a hill, conjuring up illusory tricks, administering poison, starving him, exposing him to severe cold, wind, fire, and water, or throwing heavy stones to crush him. He was very serious. That's one thing we can say, that when he performed austerities to gain his powers, he was determined and serious, and when he applied that determination to whatever he did it with that same determination. When Hiranyakashipu found that he could not in any way harm Prahlad, who was completely sinless, he was in great anxiety about what to do next. Hiranyakashipu thought, I've used many ill names in chastising this boy Prahlad, and have devised many means of killing him. But despite all my endeavors, he could not be killed. And why? What was the hint in the previous verse? He was sinless. Why is our mentality so flickering? I'll give you a hint. It is not because we are sinless. But Prahlad was so fixed because his consciousness was pure. It was sinless. There were no contaminations. So what do you do again when you realize your consciousness is not on the level of Prahlad, but we're so fortunate to be associating with Prahlad through reading his pastime and seeing what purity is? What do you do when you see that the consciousness that I call my consciousness, is not sinless, but it is sinful and flickering? And
And we need to take the proper medicine, and that is the holy names, devotional service, the Bhagavatam, association with devotees. Did you want to add one?
No, just that same.
But we should know carefully what the process is, because otherwise we'll be thinking we're doing the process, but we're not doing it. And then we're wondering, well, why it doesn't work. And the process is based on this surrender. And remember what Prahlad said. How he described that. You can't do it unless you... The dust... And then we have to chaito darpanam arjanam. But yet, you're really right, we shouldn't get depressed about how far we are. Rather, that is neurotic tendency, and it's self-indulgent, because all we're thinking about all day long is ourself. Rather, we should put ourselves in Krishna's hands and resist these other tendencies and continue. What else can we do but continue? Except be a little more humble. That we can do. And pray for the strength not to make the same mistakes again. And fight the sinful tendencies of the mind by the strength of what? Not by our weak minds, but by the strength of our surrender to Krishna. By the strength of the power of the holy names, by the strength of the power of the holy devotees. Hiranyakashipu thought, I've used many ill names chastising this boy. Get him mental so that he's not so strong and not so fixed. And I've devised many means of killing him. But despite all my endeavors, he could not be killed. Indeed, he saved himself not by my power, but by his own power. Without being affected in the least by these treacheries and abominable actions that I have committed to my own son. Although he is very near to me and is merely a child. What does merely mean? Only. He's only a child. He's only a little child. And I am the ruler of the universe. And I'm trying to kill him with all my power and all the determination, all the sincerity that I possess. I'm trying to kill him. And this mere child has resisted it, and he's completely fearless. He resembles a dog's curved tail, which can never be straightened. Or you can say it can be straightened, but what happens immediately after you straighten it? It goes right back. And if we're not sure of this example, there are many Vrindavan dogs, so you can try it on. You can go over to them and say, excuse me, take the tail and hold it, and you can take an iron if you like. You just say, excuse me one second, I'm just going to try to iron out this problem you have. You take an iron and iron his tail straight, and then watch what happens. Boing! It comes right back. So what a glorious thing to be, to have that type of crookedness in the sense of fixedness in our consciousness in service to Krishna, that no matter what happens, we just go back to that Krishna, I am yours. How glorious. So he says, he resembles a dog's curved tail which can never be straightened, because he never forgets my misbehavior and his connection with his master, Lord Vishnu. And the Sunasepa, which is the Sunasepa, Prabhupada explains in the purport, the curved tail, which means literally the curved tail of a dog, also refers to one son of Adigata, Puranic story, who was he was sold. There's a long story about this in the Puranas, but he took shelter of Vishwamrita, and he underwent great hardship. Going to be killed, if I believe. And
it's there in the seventh chapter.
The entirety of it.
A little bit.
Yeah.
The
so he never left the side of Vishwamrita. So he continues 47. I can see that this boy's strength is unlimited. So this is the first test of Hiranyakashipu's powers, that his powers have failed him. He's conquered, based on the benediction of Lord Brahma, he's subjugated the entirety of the universe. Again, so much that all the demigods, other than Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, were forced, and even Narada Muni, were forced to pay obeisances. They're so powerful, they were his enemies. And this young, mere child is defying him. And Dudu is taking shelter of Vishnu. And some doubt comes to Hiranyakashipu's mind. He gets mental. Prahlad doesn't get mental. I can see this boy's strength is unlimited. So that means he's beginning to perceive that his own strength is limited because he cannot force himself upon this boy who's taking shelter of Vishnu. And that's the question. That's the question that he's going to ask Prahlad right before his death. Where is your strength coming from? And Prahlad answers, the same place that your strength is coming from. Your limited strength is resting upon the unlimited Vishnu. And Hiranyakashipu cannot accept this and becomes still more angry, but that's getting way ahead. But everyone knows that there's a happy ending anyway, so it's okay. I can see this boy's strength is unlimited, for he has not feared any of my punishments. He appears immortal. Therefore, because of my enmity towards him, I shall die. Or maybe this will not take place. His mind immediately comes back. He's fearful, and his mind protects him. His whole sense of self is that I am the all-powerful, I can never die, I will conquer the universe, no one is more powerful than me. And then in confronting Prahlad, he becomes fearful, and because of this boy, am I harassing of him, I am going to die. But immediately, but maybe this will not take place, the mind comes, swings back, and it builds up his full sense of, oh, I am Hiranyakashipu, the all-powerful. But yet, these thoughts could not help. He could not keep them from his mind again. Thinking in this way, so what thoughts are coming to your mind right now?
I'm thinking of situations where I've responded similarly to Hiranyakashipu.
So what inspiration is... Oh, I thought you were going to say to Prahlad.
I wish.
Oh, well, there is the point. I wish. That is what comes to the heart from reading this. I wish. I wish I had the devotion of Prahlad. Yes? That, and therefore the Bhagavatam is doing its work. I wish I could be like Prahlad, because instead of wishing, you know, I could have everything at my fingertips and in control of everything, and I would, instead of wishing all those materialistic thoughts by being in the presence of the Bhagavatam, I'm wishing only if I could have a fraction of the devotion and fixedness of Prahlad. And yayatam mam papadyante, Krishna hears that desire. And he reciprocates. He appears immortal. Therefore, because of my enmity towards him, I shall die. Or maybe this will not take place. Thinking in this way, the king of the Daityas, morose and bereft of bodily luster, remained silent with his face downward. What does it mean to have his face downward? What does it mean when it's face downward? It means like this.
Downcast.
Yeah, downcast. His eyes are down. Yeah, like that.
No power.
Huh? Yeah, you feel powerless. Yeah.
Doubtful.
Doubtful of what?
Doubtful.
Doubtful of what?
Thoughtful.
Thoughtful. Yes, very thoughtful. And what was in his thoughts? just what he said. What's going to happen to me? Then Sandanamarka, the two sons of Sukracharya, spoke to him in secret. This was Kamsa's problem too, wasn't it? Described in the 10th canto, Krishna book. That was his problem. He felt bad after killing the son and the children of, and then the eighth child turns out to be a girl, and he felt very humbled. But then what happened? He went, he's surrounded by his old friends. That's like the minds, all the thoughts come back and build up the. But yeah, don't worry. You know, we'll fix Prahlad. Don't worry. So Sandanamarka, they spoke to him in secret. Yeah, it is. That's what goes on in my mind all the time. You know, all the thoughts come in secret like that. And they rebuild the sense of I am the controller and everything. We have to know who our friends are and who our enemies are. Remember Prabhupada's purport? What did it say? Back the full purport that we read? To Hiranyakasipu's comparing him to a medicinal herb that we should keep, and like the arm that we should amputate. So devotees actually serious about advancing in spiritual life should give up the company of non-devotees and always keep company with devotees. To be attached to material existence is ignorance, because material existence is temporary and miserable. Therefore, devotees who are determined to perform tapasya, to realize the self, and who are determined to become advanced in spiritual consciousness must give up the company of atheistic non-devotees. So there's one that lives very, very close to me that I can't, if I treat him as my friend, he is slitting my throat. So therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's methodology of dealing with this one to turn him, the enemy, into a friend is the beating method. And understand clearly that who is friend and who is enemy. Which thoughts are friendly for me? The ones that build me up or the ones that make me deal with reality? And the method of Raghunath Das Goswami is pleading with the mind, why are you doing this? Please take shelter of the Lord. Don't think yourself so great. And don't tell me that I'm so great and that it's everyone else's fault. So, O Lord, we know that when you simply move your eyebrows, all the commanders of the various planets are most afraid. Without the help of any assistant, you have conquered all the three worlds. Sounds like perfect representative of the false ego. Therefore, we do not find any reason for you to be morose and full of anxiety. As for Prahlad, he is nothing but a child and cannot be the cause of anxiety. After all, his bad or good qualities have no value. It means that if a child is acting good, he'll change in a moment to be naughty. And if a child is acting naughty, he'll change in a moment to be good. So we don't take seriously the actions of him. He's a child. Until the return of our spiritual master, Sukracharya, arrest this child with the ropes of Varuna so that he will not flee in fear. After all, you've tried to kill him in so many ways. In any case, by the time he has somewhat grown up, and he has assimilated our instructions or served our spiritual master, he will change. He will change in his intelligence. There's no need. There need be no cause for anxiety. And after hearing these instructions of Sandanamarka, the sons of his spiritual master, Hiranyakasipu, agreed and requested them to instruct Prahlad in that system of occupational duty which is followed by royal household of families. That means the varnic duties of of polity, of economic development, all these different kinds of things. But Prahlad, of course, was transcendental to these things. So that type of dharma wasn't actual dharma for him. He was on the level, as Prabhupada explains in his purport, of actual Sanatana Dharma or Jivera Sarupoya Krishna Nityadas. That's one's real occupational duty or dharma. So thereafter, Sandanamarka systematically and unceasingly taught Prahlad Maharaj, who was very submissive and humble, about mundane religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Because dharma means the Vedic rituals, prescribed duties, etc., to make one religious, and by that religion you'll gain artha or wealth, and then by artha or wealth you can enjoy kama. So dharma, artha, kama, desires. Because without wealth you cannot enjoy. The teachers, Sandanamarka, instructed Prahlad Maharaj in the three kinds of material advancement called religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Prahlad, however, being situated above such instructions, did not like them. For such instructions are based on the duality of worldly affairs. Something in the world is good in this material world, and something is bad. Something is auspicious, suvasup, something is inauspicious. But these, they are such which involve one in materialistic way of life, marked by birth, death, old age, and disease. So this is the path that the world is following, and it is difficult to escape from this path. The Prabhupada explains that the Mahajans have the great souls from spoken by Yamaraj, who have given the spiritual path. So at the end of his purport, he says, one must follow in the footsteps of such great personalities as Lord Brahma, Narada, Lord Shiva, Kapila, Manu, Kumaras, Prahlad Maharaj, Bhishma, Janaka, Bali Maharaj, Sukadev Goswami, and Yamaraj. Those interested in spiritual life should follow Prahlad Maharaj in rejecting the education of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. One should be interested in spiritual education. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement is spreading all over the world following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, who did not like any of the materialistic education he received from his teachers. Text 54. When the teachers went home to attend to their household affairs, the students of the same age as Prahlad Maharaj would call him to take the opportunity of leisure hour for play. Prahlad Maharaj, so the students were away, it was playtime, children called Prahlad, let's play. Prahlad had a different idea. Prahlad Maharaj, who was truly the supreme learned person, then addressed his class fellows in very sweet language. Smiling, he began to teach them about the uselessness of the materialistic way of life. Being very kind to them, he instructed them as follows. We'll read that purport and we'll read the final purport, but I'll read the last verse, last two verses first. My dear King Yudhisthira, so what did he instruct them about? Out of his kindness? What, and from verse 55? Uselessness of the materialistic way of life. And that, we'll hear that theme when we hear of Prahlad's teachings to his schoolmates. We'll hear him talking about that. He has to convince them to give up this materialistic teaching. And this is the same thing he told his father. It's following the blind. You don't know what the goal of life is. And as long as you are holding on to a materialist concept of what life's about, you will never develop the inclination to love Krishna. The mind's inclination will not develop as long as you think that the purpose of life is sense enjoyment. So therefore, this type of preaching, anti-materialistic preaching, although it's not bhakti, it's required to develop bhakti. As Prahlad is saying, we have to become convinced of this, and therefore, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if you actually understand this point, the uselessness of trying to be happy in the material world, you have taken the greatest step forward in spiritual life, because the inclination to Krishna then can develop, and otherwise it cannot. So the final verses. My dear King Yudhisthira, all the children were very much affectionate and respectful to Prahlad Maharaj. And because of their tender age, they were not so polluted by the instructions and actions of their teachers, who were attached to condemn duality and bodily comfort. Condemn duality. This is good, this is bad. This is what keeps one in the material world. Icha dvesha samutena dvanva mohena bharata. This is good, the situation in the material world is good, the situation is bad. But a devotee actually transcends this. If you think about transcending the dualities in this material world seriously and think of what the dualities are, this person loves me, this person hates me, this person this, and think, then we'll understand how deep our self-taking shelter of Krishna actually has to be transcendental. It can't be superficial, it can't be theoretical, it has to be full. Full shelter of Krishna. I know what that sigh meant. Yeah. Oh, I thought it meant, oh, how many more minutes till prasadam? No. No, I knew what it meant. Oh. So therefore, step one, understand what the practices are, what it really means. What anyabhilasita sunyam? Anyabhilasita sunyam is pure devotional service, which is the abhideya tattva. To achieve prema, which is the full inclination to Krishna. So first we understand that, then we become humble, and then we can chant properly. Thus the boys, because they loved Prahlad, because he was so wonderful. Thus the boys surrounded Prahlad Maharaj, giving up their playthings, and sat down to hear him. Prahlad said, I want to tell you something. Their hearts and eyes being fixed on him, they looked at him with great earnestness. Earnestness means intensity too. They were fixed on him. Prahlad Maharaj, although born in a demon family, was an exalted devotee and he desired their welfare. Thus, he began instructing them about the futility of materialistic life. Same point. The uselessness of materialistic way of life from the previous verse. And here, about the futility of materialistic life. Now we'll read these two purports. Prahlad Maharaj smiling is very significant because he was smiling at them. The other students were very much advanced in enjoying materialistic life through religion, economic development, and sense gratification. But Prahlad Maharaj laughed at them, knowing this was not actual happiness, for real happiness is advancement in Krishna consciousness. The duty of those who follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj is to teach the entire world how to be Krishna conscious, and thus be really happy. Materialistic persons take so-called religion to get some blessings so that they can improve their economic position and enjoy the material world through sense gratification. But devotees like Prahlad Maharaj laugh at how foolish they are to be busy in a temporary life without knowledge of the soul's transmigration from one body to another. Same as non-religious people, same focus, materialistic life. Materialistic persons are engaged in striving for temporary benefits, whereas persons advanced in spiritual knowledge, such as Prahlad Maharaj, are not interested in the materialistic way of life. They're not interested. Instead, they want to be elevated to an eternal life of knowledge and bliss. Therefore, as Krishna consciousness is always Therefore, as Krishna is always compassionate to the fallen souls,
His servants, the devotees of Lord Krishna, are also interested in educating the entire populace in Krishna consciousness. The mistake of materialistic life is understood by devotees, and therefore they smile upon it, considering it insignificant. Out of compassion, however, such devotees preach the gospel of Bhagavad Gita all over the world. And then Prabhupada's purport, short purport in the final verse. The word bala adushitadiya indicates that the children, being of a tender age, were not as polluted by materialistic life as their fathers. Prahlad Maharaj, therefore, taking advantage of the innocence of his class friends, began teaching them about the importance of spiritual life and the insignificance of materialistic life. Insignificance means non-importance of materialistic life. Like if everyone wants to be a billionaire, every materialistic person wants to be a billionaire. So if you become a billionaire for an 11th of a second, is there any significance in that? No, because it's useless. So that's from that point of view, from that viewpoint, the viewpoint of eternal life with Krishna, a spiritualist, a devotee, a pure devotee, judges the materialistic endeavors. It's useless, it's temporary. Adyantavanta kanteya nateshu ramate buddha. A wise person sees from that point of view. Although the teachers, Sandana Marka, were instructing all the boys in the materialistic life of religion, economic development, sense gratification, the boys were not much polluted. Therefore, with great attention, they wanted to hear from Prahlad Maharaj about Krishna consciousness. They liked him. They saw he had something wonderful. They wanted to hear from him. In our Krishna consciousness movement, the Gurukula plays an extremely important part in our activities, because right from childhood, the boys at the Gurukula are instructed about Krishna consciousness. Thus, they become steady within the cause of their heart, and there is very little possibility that they will be conquered by the modes of material nature when they are older. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport to the seventh canto, fifth chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Prahlad Maharaj, the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu. Very interesting Gurukula katha there. Extremely important part in our activities, because right from childhood the boys at the Gurukula are instructed about Krishna consciousness. Thus they become steady within the cores of their heart, and there is very little possibility they will be conquered by the modes of material nature when they are older. And so questions can come to one's mind if one knows the history of what happened. You know, and some of them appeared to be conquered. So one can answer that in many ways. One way is that they are not conquered fully. They are a little covered, but not conquered. Conquered means they are flattened, destroyed. They have something still in them that is unconquered, that Krishna consciousness that they have, it is theirs forever. Another way to look at it is that only if Prahlad Maharaj was the one instructing them, instead of some of the teachers that were not quite as qualified, what to speak of, some of them were quite nasty. So therefore, that while they were young and innocent, they were not able to imbibe. And another way to see is that some just were not ready to hear, to be in the circumstance they were in, not qualified enough. Okay, we'll stop here, and there's some minutes for questions. Because you can see that different students really reacted in different ways. Very different. Very mysterious also. But never to give an excuse for teachers to act inappropriately. But still, even faced with the worst kind of things, some students somehow transcended it completely, practically speaking. Very, very rare ones. But yet I've seen that All one can do is offer one's obeisances at their lotus feet, because under the most difficult terror, like Prahlad being tortured by his father, some of them, in spite of the most horrible things happening to them, that carry no bitterness and are very, very transcendental. So if other students didn't react like that, in terrible circumstances, weren't up to the level of Prahlad, I don't feel it's, we can criticize them because, you know, they're not Paramahamsas or something. Okay. But yet different souls reacted in different ways. But yet again, only if devotees like Prahlad infused such depth of Krishna consciousness in their hearts that even the children of demons were a little less implicated in materialistic life. They were deeply turned to Krishna. And then again, even those, this is the review of that, the first one I mentioned, but still even, and they all have something. Okay. Any questions or comments? Raise your hand if you want this, a question or comment. If you have a question or comment, I'll take it. Let it set.
A very small comment and a small question. The comment is, in regards to this mood of being the controller, and if anyone comes in one's way, one wants to kill him, I couldn't help but think of a very nice passage in one of the songs of Shelter, that band that did extensive preaching, and the author, the singer's name is Raghunath, and so he wrote really nice contemporary Krishna conscious things, and so there's one song where he encapsulates this mood quite nicely, I think. So it goes like this: in my universe I can go wrong, all those opposed just move along, cross my path and you'll be gone, come on, come on, come on. I live in a world where I'm the center of it all, and everyone else seems so small. That was the beginning of my downfall. Yeah, that was the beginning of my downfall. My question is, how can Hiranyakashipu, who's such a big demon...
Wait.
Oh, you wanted to comment?
No, well, let it settle in. It's heavy. Give it a few seconds to settle. That's one of the things that you learn in a teacher training course. Is when there's a strong point, you should pause. Just let it.
I just felt embarrassing.
I know. But that was a humble. Okay, go ahead.
Hiranyakashipu talks about when he fails in killing his son. He talks about things like my misbehavior, my abominable actions. He's even using words like sinful. So how can such a demon, even big demons such as Hiranyakashipu, sometimes feel some sort of guilt? And if so, how is that possible, given that they have such a demoniac mentality to begin with?
But everyone in the material world is bluffing. I am the greatest, I am the center. It's a bluff. And in the core of everyone's heart, everyone knows it's a bluff. But it's the false ego is very big, and they bluff others into thinking that it's impenetrable. But everyone in the material world has doubts. And to their closest friends, they may confide them. Because their shelter is illusion, but reality is much stronger than illusion. And reality, if there's a fight between reality and illusion, who wins? Reality must win. And there's a wonderful comment by Srila Jiva Goswami. And he says that when a soul hears something, some Krishna katha, something like that, and even though he's completely materialistic and he's never thought that way before, and the doubt comes in his mind, hey, maybe it's true. He says, that's the beginning of bhakti. So if Aranyakasipu were an ordinary soul, but of course we know he's not, he's descended for this pastime and other pastimes. If we could say that, hey, maybe I'm not all powerful. Maybe this Prahlad knows something that I don't know. Maybe Vishnu is. And then even if 2 seconds later Sandar and Amoka come in and say, no, don't think like that. You've created the universe. You lift your eyebrows and everyone's fearful. But that one moment of doubt that I'm the center of the universe is the beginning of something wonderful and eternal. So just as you asked the question, how could he think like that? You could ask the question on the other side, how couldn't he think like that? Yes, that's following the commentaries, by the way.
Yes. He mentions that in life-threatening situation, if we do ask for help...
And abhilasita, as opposed to abhilas.
Yes.
Is that a question or a comment?
That's a comment.
Yes.
Because it happens to...
But it didn't say, also... that in a life-threatening situation, you must ask for help. He said, if you ask for help.
Yes.
Yes. So it's also pure devotion.
Oh, yes. It's higher.
He says it's not antagonistic to pure devotion. Yes. That if in the most difficult situation, if you said, Krishna, help me. Like Draupadi or something, too. Oh, there's an order. I think he's considered a Santa Bhakta, actually. Or a Dasya or Santa. Where do we put Prahlad on the hierarchy of devotion? Is he, what do you ask? Is he just in Bhava Bhakti or is he in Prema Bhakti? I can't 100% remember. But I think he's considered on prema level in Santa Bhakti. I think, or Dasya, Santa. But I'm not 100%. But how I tend to want to answer that question is, from my position, I could see him as way up there. And if I look up to how high he is, I'll hurt my neck. Only. Yes.
It means,
it should be given so that they can become devotees and do things in Krishna's service. But materialistic education means education for me. So that, in other words, just for me. So the same thing, the math, the science, the geography, this, that, can be used for Krishna's pleasure to serve Krishna's devotees. So that should be the mode of education. And of course, this is ideally, clearly. So for materialistic people, what kind of education should be given? They don't want spiritual education, so they should be given materialistic education. That's what they'll get. But this is the purpose of this education is so you can get a good job, so you can make good money, so you can live the comfortable life and die peacefully with a big bank balance. So that's what is Prabhupada speaking against. The purpose of this education is that. And a devotee education is so that you can, whatever position you are, you can progress towards what is truly valuable. What's the use of living a life and then dying like an animal with no more knowledge than you came into this world with, no more devotion than you came into this world with? So that's a general answer to that, and there are finer shades, and what should we do in this circumstance, what should we do with that, but this is the general principle. Materialistic means I'm the center of everything. So, because the children will take the kind of education generally that they're given, so therefore it's the duty of the elders to give them a spiritual education with a spiritual center. That the purpose of life is not to try to enjoy your senses only. The purpose of life is to learn to love Krishna. And maybe you're not on that level, okay, so you have material desires, okay, so you take this and move in this direction with it. Where will be your shelter when it's the time of the death? So how can an older person who's experienced life, how could he not tell those he loves that point? Any other questions or comments? Yes.
You have to get rid of the false ego, and the false ego is usually understanding the time, the master and the enjoyer. And we have to develop the mood of the servant. But the problem is that oftentimes when we try to replace it with the idea I am a servant, it is also oftentimes a mental imposition. It's not the true seeing of the reality. It's also a false ego. Isn't it?
So can, yeah, okay. I know what you're saying.
On a neophyte stage.
So would Prahlad give us the cure for this, actually? Naisam matis tavararupa mangvim svishad anata parito svanata mahisham parajo basekam niskinjananam navaniti yavad. You can't be just the servant without having someone who's your master. So to fix that point, that you need a master. A guru to surrender yourself to and to actually become a servant of someone.
Even then, to enjoy.
But okay, so the first point is you have less the chance if there's a person who you have to surrender to. It means do what he says, follow what he says very seriously for his pleasure. And then the second question is, what happens when the false ego tries to take that and turn it into a circumstance where I'm the master, I'm the enjoyer? So it's not in one's benefit to do that. It's not for one's own good to do that. It's in one's, for one's own welfare to learn what devotion is, to learn what surrender is. Yes, the false ego, the mind will tend to always turn everything that the holy names, the process of devotional service, it will tend to turn everything that this is the power of Maya that we use against Maya to in Maya's service. Yeah, Maya will do that. So what to do if we have Krishna, if we have one time called out that verse, if we have one time called out to Krishna sincerely, I want this, even though the rest of the time it makes me so much insincerity, Krishna will not forget that, and he'll arrange circumstances that we see our folly, because it is a folly. It may take our time. If we're very clever, subtle manipulators of the material energy, may take its time, and that tendency is always there. And if it wasn't for Krishna's mercy, we wouldn't have much hope. And of course there's the power of association. By association with the sincere, we recognize our own shortcomings and our own tendencies gradually. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivedanta ki jai.